The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
We have three guests on television tonight because joining Alison Healy and Dee Reddy, we have from our own production team, Robin Kelligan, who is here as our Love Island correspondent. Yes, we've decided briefly to have such a thing. Okay, I don't want to be accused of snobbishness in any way or been in any way trying to be superior. So just, Robin, explain what the attraction of Love Island is to so many people.
Matt, all year I wait for the Love Island bubble, the summer Love Island bubble. It's here. I'm in it. I'm comfortable. I can see, you know, people blurry on the outside of the bubble, but I'm happy inside it. Me and my housemates sit down 9 o'clock every night. We wait for it. We wait for each other. We pause it, say, come on, get downstairs. We're ready. We're in position. And it's just...
Why?
It's just light entertainment. Like, there's so much going on. I like to sit down. You know, everyone loves a bit of gossip, right? Everyone loves hearing, you know, what's going on with their people, friends, love lives, everything. It's handed to you on a plate at 9 o'clock every night, Matt. You just watch these people flirt, fall in love, in inverted commas, you know, meet each other, like, do challenges, run around the place, chat. You know what I mean? It's just light and fluffy and I love it. And I just enjoy it. And do you know what's as good as well? The reaction to it, the chat about it, Twitter, all the memes, all the like.
It is a water cooler thing. This is something that you can come in and talk to friends about and work the following day.
Yeah, everyone's talking about it. Like, you know, people, my friends text me that know that I watch it and say, did you watch last night? Can't believe that happened. This happened, you know, relating it to.
But why it and not other reality TV shows?
I think it's still like, I think of fourth series now of, you know, when Love Island came back, and I think it's, you know, Big Brother went on for so many years, got very, very stale. Like, people still love Love Island, still in a way in its infancy, because it's still, that's very short amount of series for a reality show. It's a good time of year. It catches everyone's attention. Everyone wants to see summer. Everyone wants to see people like going around in a villa. Like,
it's no, that's just what summer looks like.
Yeah. It's exactly what I look like if I was in that villa, exactly, if anyone's wondering. But, you know, it's just light and fluffy and we can all chat about it. It's fun.
Alison Healy, you, I believe, have gone on a sort of a Love Island sabbatical.
Well, I never watched it.
Oh, I thought you used to watch it.
No, never watched it. I was staunchly against it, which is weird because I'm addicted to the Kardashians, Real Housewives. I'll take any junk TV. I think it's something weird about going into a locked up place and you're not allowed to come out till you fall in love. And I just don't buy the premise of it. I know I buy the premise of Kim Kardashian, but I don't buy the premise of that. But it just gives me an icky feeling. So today I sat down and for the purpose of research, I press play in the office and I quickly had to move desks because I was afraid people were think that I was watching porn at my desk. It was just boobs and bum and abs everywhere. Slow-mo wind machines, the most annoying laughs of all time. I understand, Robin, what you're saying about light entertainment, light on clothing. They're just naked the whole time. And it was just,
it's turning you into Mary Whitehouse.
Well, excuse me. I've never been accused of such a thing. I kind of, it's vomit inducing. It's really formulaic and kind of insulting to people's intelligence.
Hang on, and you watch the Kardashians and you're saying
that.
This
is what I'm saying. This is the bar I've set.
Very cavallari in those things.
Well, yeah.
I think there's a distinction to be made between the two of them, though, in that the Kardashians produce the TV show that they're on, right? So they're not being thrown into this kind of, does the producer like you? Oh no, you're going to be the villain. Like that, they film them for so many hours a day that they can kind of build any narrative that they want.
Gee,
out
that's
of
a very interesting point that they're almost in control of it.
Yeah, the Kardashians are in control of their narrative, for want of a better
and
thing.
And the image that they project, and then they use that for selling other things.
But that's not the case with the Love Island contestants. So in some ways, audiences love that because anything could happen, and there's the unknown thing because you kind of know when you're watching the Kardashians that they have agreed to everything on screen. There's a brilliant clip actually that you can get on the internet that Charlie Brooker did years ago. It was around the time of Big Brother, like late into the Big Brother series, and he got a group of people, so like one of his researchers, somebody from Big Brother, and he put them all into a room, including himself, for 24 hours. And then he went and he edited and he's like, look, this looks like I told a joke, and everyone's laughing. And then he goes, this looks like I told a joke, and nobody laughed. And it just shows how you can manipulate the footage when you have enough of it to get kind of any reaction.
The thing I'd say about the people who go on Love Island is that they know know that, though. They know that, and they go into it for a particular reason.
But are they going in for love or fame, Robin?
Oh, like, yeah, they're going in for fame, 100%. That's
fine. I agree with Robin
on
that, to be fair.
I don't buy that they're all falling in love. No, but I'm happy to go along with it for the programme because it's entertaining. It's really, really entertaining. You know, there's only been two episodes already. We are fans of this person. We want these people to fall in love.
Who do you want to win?
Like, at the start, like, we all love Lucy and Joe now. I don't know whether we can give away spoilers what happened last night, but you know, they might have been torn apart already. It's only episode two. But people are wanting...
But at first, people have to catch up. It's not like something we can do spoiler alert because people are going to watch episode three tonight. You know what? Let's actually give people a little taste of it because there might be lots of people who are not watching this. I think it's on Virgin Media 2 that it's on each night. There may be people listening to this going, what the hell are they talking about? So let's get a little bit where... A character called Curtis Pritchard.
Character.
Yes.
Person.
Makes his decision.
It's been a very hard decision to make. I mean, coming in as the position that I've come in as, I didn't want to step on any of your lads' toes whatsoever. And I've come in and I'm going to have to, unfortunately, end a coupling with one of you. The reason why I'm going to choose this young lady is she is funny. You know, as soon as I get to spend some time with her, I'm laughing straight away. She's fantastic. She's good looking. She is very intelligent. Yeah, you know, it's a definite. So the girl I want to couple up with is... Ailey.
Comments from listeners. I hate reality television but can't stop watching Love Island. I do think it's effectively directed though. Another one. Ah, Matt, you never lower yourself to this waffle. Is there nothing of substance to talk about apart from this tripe for half-wits? Don't give in to entertaining this. It's a waste of airtime.
Well, yes, I agree with some of it, but oh God, I think I might watch it tonight.
But it's hard to explain.
It didn't take long to turn you.
It didn't take long to turn me. I don't know what it is. It's like this perfect formula of exactly everything your brain needs when you switch off at night time and you just lie back and just have it wash over you, passive washing.
And in fairness, Robin, I mean, you're a very valued member of our production team. You like watch a lot of current affairs, you know, like programmes, keeping on top of what we need to cover on the programme here. You watch a lot of crime drama, various other things. This is just part of an overall menu, really, isn't it?
Yeah, people have varied tastes, Matt. I wouldn't say it's any lesser than what's... You're allowed to watch a whole variety of different programmes. So you might watch light entertainment in the morning. So you might watch, you know, talk show, chat show, any type of thing that's a bit lighter. Graham Norton, any of this.
You even watch Leinster Rugby.
I do indeed, yeah. But what's the problem with that, Matt? You know, I wouldn't judge anyone for anything that they watch. That's why it's all out there. There's a reason why Love Island is popular. There's a reason why it's very, very addictive. I can't explain why, but it just is.
Love Island is the worst vapid, mindless, exploitative drivel I've ever come across. And yes, I have actually watched an episode, says a listener.
But Robin, what do you feel about the fact that they're uncoupled and then the man picks the girl and then the girl picks the other man and then they're left on the side and they have... They're, it's like, you know, that scene in Greece where they're not picked to dance.
Is
and
that
it's
not
awful.
Like any dating show, though, to be fair.
It's maybe any dating in reality, that reality dating.
Sure, Blind Date did that.
You know, the format is if you're not coupled up in the island, you know, if you're not in a couple, you're vulnerable to be kicked off the island, right? So the aim of the game is to be in a couple, right? And it is, you do what it takes to stay in a couple.
That's,
you know,
cutthroat.
It is cutthroat, but it's
sounds
great
like going
entertainment.
To a wedding in your 30s.
Okay, well, listen to this. Paula says, Matt, there was a time when you actually commented on real issues. Well, tonight on the programme, we've dealt with Ireland's climate change performance. We have dealt with travel insurance, TDs pursuing personal injury claims, about bringing back bonuses for bankers, about tobacco style warnings on sweet and fizzy drink packages, Donald Trump's visit to Ireland. Also, we've had our medical spot with Ray Wally. We've had the business news. So we can talk about loads of different things on this programme. And let's move on now to The Handmaid's Tale, which returns for series three. Not getting great previews out of the United States, apparently. Has it actually gone on too long, even by starting a series 3D?
I definitely think it has gone on for too long. Season one was a brilliant watch, and it was largely sticking to the Margaret Atwood source material. Season two, obviously, because they'd finished the book, they had to veer, of course, and build another story. But it kind of have to start to question how much longer you can keep these characters in this world where it doesn't become sort of torture porn to a certain extent.
Yeah, just remind people what The Handmaid's Tale is all about.
So The Handmaid's Tale is based on a kind of dystopic novel that Margaret Atwood would have written, I think, in the mid-80s. So they obviously updated the material to make it more relevant for nowadays. But it's set in America, which is now called Gilead, in a sort of post... You're never actually given what happens. It's this sort of post-apocalyptic situation where America has basically been taken over by a very hard right, very Christian movement. The fertility of women and men has gone down considerably. So all fertile women are basically taken in. Well, the ones that have maybe a bad past, but bad past in this regime could be anything from having an affair or having had a child out of wedlock. They're taken in, they're put into these camps, and then they're sent out to different families to basically be a surrogate. But the surrogate lives as a slave to the family.
I actually watched the first episode last night. So
you're going back to series three or series one?
Series one. So
you only started it.
Yeah, when I'd heard
it's very dark.
And that's what put it off. I just thought it's so dark.
It's got the wonderful Elizabeth Moss in it as well.
She's a spectacular of West Wing
and Mad Men.
Yeah,
in particular.
Absolutely, and a Gilmore Girls character in it as well. So which you know, I was like on the paper, I thought it would be great, and then I heard how dark it was, subject matter. It's just kind of torturous, you know, rape of women. And then I watched the first episode last night and it's incredible. And I'm kind of annoyed now because I've seen the story arc and how the episodes overtook the writing source material, like we saw with Game of Thrones. And we all know how that ended. And now
I'm
kind of...
Don't go there again. Let it go, Alison.
Can't let
it go. Let it go.
Can't let it go. I'm frozen in time and I can't let it go. And I'm wary of the fact that this is probably going to suffer the same fate, because when something starts out with such a clear objective and such clear direction, you have faith that it's going to follow the process. But it's getting a lot of it's coming under a lot of fire in the US, and I don't hold out much hope for it, and now I'm dubious as to whether I'll continue with it now.
Well, I was a massive fan of the book and I loved the first series. I kind of found it hard to watch midway through the second series. I don't even know if I'll revisit the third series unless we're actually reviewing it. I just think it's gone on too long, and I don't know that there's actually anything more to be said from the sort, like the first series makes some amazing points about the world that we're in right now and the potential for things to go catastrophically wrong for women's rights. But it has made that point. So do we need to continue to watch women being raped over and over again?
OK, well, let's move on to other things. And Dead to Me, who's been watching that?
Me, everybody. Who hasn't been watching it? Have you watched it, Matt?
No, never heard of it.
On Netflix, Dead to Me, Christina Applegate.
No.
Okay, well, so first of all...
Well, tell us about it.
87% approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes, right?
Which is so good. That,
Hook, Line and Sinker, it has me from the very beginning. It's about two women who meet at a kind of a grief guidance counselling meeting, and they're trying to share their stories of grief. On paper, you think that they've both lost partners recently. I don't want to give too much away because there are going to be people out there who haven't watched it, and from the very beginning this has lots of twists and turns. They're 30-minute episodes, they're shot beautifully, they're in California, they have money. It's like an OC with a dark twist, with absolutely
middle-aged
brilliant
people instead of teenagers.
Yes, brilliant pockets of humour, and the casting was brilliant. Christina Applegate said that she was semi-retired actually when this role came along, and it's brilliant to see her being used in this way. I loved it. I love this. And it's been renewed
really, really
for a second season straight off the bat of, I suppose that's the Netflix, the interesting thing with Netflix is that when something's such an instant success, they can immediately renew for a second season.
The soundtrack is amazing as well.
Oh yes,
it's a beautiful soundtrack, really kind of a mix of kind of older kind of music. It's mostly kind of older kind of music, but really jazzy and different. And kind of, if you're binging it like I did, the music kind of wakes you up a little bit. Do you find that?
And there's such a lovely chemistry between Linda Cardellini and Christina Applegate as well. And it's lovely to see that on screen, even though there's, you know, a lot more to the story that might originally be suggested.
Well, let's hear a clip from it. And this is where Jen and Judy, that's Christina Applegate and Linda Cardellini, meet at a grief support group for the first time.
Oh, you come to this group often?
No, this is my first time here.
Me too.
Oh. Sorry. I hope this isn't weird. Do you do real estate?
I feel like I've seen your face on like a
a bus bench? You and a cute gay guy?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, that's me. Christopher, who does not think he looks gay in that picture.
I didn't mean that in a bad way. I think gay is beautiful. Which bench did you see?
Oh, I think it's the one where you're like...
Oh, no.
No? He's like...
No. I guess I just mean, where do you live?
Oh, my gosh. Sorry. No. Newport Beach.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You live in Newport?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't think I belong there either.
Not a bad thing to not belong there.
Right.
But if you ever need a real estate agent, just...
Oh, wow. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
I might.
Okay.
Sorry. I hope this isn't weird. Can I give you a hug?
No.
Okay.
Okay. That didn't grab me, no, I have to say.
I think when you see that scene actually play out, they're both really, really strong comedic, physical actors. So when you see that scene play out, because Christina Applegate plays this very, very tight-laced realtor who's very posh and really doesn't want to be at grief counselling, doesn't want to talk to anything. And then Linda Cardellini comes along and she's all like curly hair and
boho,
big smiles and hoop earrings. And she just is immediately attracted to this other woman. You don't know why. And she's kind of obviously trying to get a physical hug out of her. And there's this really, really awkward
hug.
But
there's like undercurrents of other intentions throughout from the very beginning. You know that what you're looking at is it's going to feed the next episode, and everything isn't what it seems. And there's enough twists and turns in this to keep you binge watching it in one solid season. So everybody can do it on Saturday together.
Let's hear something that explains what's known as the 7-Up concept.
In 1964, Granada Television brought together a group of 7-year-olds from all over the country and from all walks of life.
I'm going to work in Woolworths. I read the Financial Times.
They talked about their dreams, their ambitions, and their fears for the future.
Everything flew up in the air. They all landed on my head.
For nearly half a century, in a unique, groundbreaking series of films, we have followed their lives every 7 years.
So let's hear a little bit of the trailer for what is now 63 Up.
Life happens and every experience will change you.
I am a cheeky chappy and I'll accept that.
I would never divorce him, but I may well murder him at some point.
This is just no place for regrets in this world.
I wake up every day and I don't know what's going to happen.
It's taken me 60 years to understand who I am.
I don't have any regrets, if the truth be told.
I'm still the same little guy. Probably all of us are. I'm still the same kid.
The groundbreaking series returns. 63 Up starts Tuesday the 4th of June on ITV.
Okay, so how many of them were involved in this at the start and how many are still involved?
So I know one passed away in 2013, and then there's two participants who didn't make it beyond 21 Up. I think there were 7 of them.
I think there's 11 left.
Is there?
There?
Oh, yeah. There's more. There was more of them to start
14
off.
14 initially.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Lynn Johnson became the first to pass away, and there are two that didn't become involved.
It sounds like a good idea, but does it actually translate into good television?
It does. I actually remember reviewing 56 Up for my sins for another station.
You were only 10 then, didn't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, that's it. That's it, exactly. But it's quite an amazing thing, because obviously you're following somebody, and especially like to talk about it in the same breath as something like Love Island. Like you're like the families that would have signed up to this, like they were all from such different walks of life, and you get to see the twist and turns in a person's life, and so much can change in 7 years. Like, there's one particularly compelling character in it. It's a chap called Neil Hughes, and like, he's the real bright spark of the very first 7 Up, and he's like this Liverpudlian kid, and he wants to be an astronaut, and he's alongside some really, really posh kids who fulfilled their parents' ambitions and all went on and became barristers and the like. And then when you see him by 14, he's having trouble at school, and he's a bit agitated, and they know there's something wrong, but they're not quite sure. And then by 21, he's failed at getting into Oxford, which he really wanted. By 28, he's down and out and he's homeless. The next one, I think he's squatting. And then by 42, he's kind of rebuilt his life with the help of one of the other participants. Which is quite an amazing thing. One of the kind of wealthier kids who in the first episode said that he wants to help poor people watched the last one and actually had him move into his home and helped him get back on his feet. So like, the stories that you're getting out of people, they're really quite amazing.
And you're emotionally invested as a watcher,
you
as
really
well. It's
are.
Like Boyhood with that movie, yeah, with Patricia Arquette. And it was, you know, groundbreaking at the time. And groundbreaking is, you know, bandied about a lot when they're talking about this. But it is groundbreaking to get people to sign up, to commit to this, and then to get them to stay. All of them have, you know, the majority of them have stayed. And some of them are talking about 70 and up and where they'll be in 7 years' time already.
Michelle is saying, I've seen some of these from 28 up. Some of them are very sad how lives have turned out, but also very good. As someone who's never watched Love Island, I'd say this is way superior. Give us your pick of the week, please, Alison.
My pick of the week is probably one of the most important conversations I've seen on television in a long time. It's the David Letterman talk show on Netflix. My next guest needs no introduction. It's specifically the first episode in the new batch of episodes which have landed, and it's his chat with Kanye West.
Let's hear a little bit of it.
When you're in this state, you're hyper paranoid about everything. Everyone, this is my experience. Some people have other experiences. Everyone now is an actor. Everything is a conspiracy. You see everything. You feel the government is putting chips in your head. You feel you're being recorded. You feel all of these things.
And these are vividly realistic to you.
Yes. And you get taken and you have this moment. You feel everyone wants to kill you. You pretty much don't trust anyone. And they have this moment where they put you, they handcuff you, they drug you, they put you on the bed, and they separate you from everyone you know. They don't do that to pregnant women. That's something that I am so happy that I experienced myself so I can start by changing that moment. You have to have... When you are in that state, you have to have someone you trust. It is cruel and primitive to do that.
I think it's just one of the most important mental health conversations that is on the internet at the moment, and it's definitely worth a watch.
Very briefly, your pick, D.
Well, continuing my theme of picking really upbeat stuff, I've got Black Mirror for you this week. Season 5 is back today, actually, on Netflix. There's only 3 episodes this time around.
Thank you very much, Alison Healy, D. Reddy, and also we had Robin Callaghan with us tonight.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.